All right, and we are saying a fond hello to you, all of you out there. This is. I just want to talk about Star Trek, our hybrid edition here. There's no more music preamble because we're recording straight to video. We're pivoting to video. So if you're listening on the podcast, I'm sorry we don't have that cool music.
I miss that music.
I know. I should probably find a way to put it in on these opening. I probably can. I'm lazy right now, but I'll do it. But that's okay. Cause it's coming. This is kind of our kind of slow pivot. Cause you can listen to it in the quality on the podcast is a little bit worse, and I apologize for that, but I can record to Zoom and then put it right in there. Makes things easier to any extent. Welcome. I'm Mike McCafferty.
I'm Tony Caselli. Hi.
We are joined by Tony Caselli, one of my best friends in the entire universe. In multiple universes, even in the Terran universe of all things. Tony, can you see that thing that says updates not installed on my computer or no?
No.
Oh, okay, good. So it's my computer wants to transfer over to Big Sur and I can't because of work stuff, but we are joined here by Tony Caselli, Star Trek aficionado, super smart guy. Can I make this window bigger? How do I do that? No, I made you go. Made me go away. And we are talking. We're gonna be doing a 3-for-1 today.
Woo!
Yeah, we're gonna try and get through all this. We are gonna leap through time, and
yeah, leapfrogging through episodes. Here we go.
Yeah, because we have to. So, but I want to try and make this larger. I want to make you and I larger. You can make a joke about that. I can't do it. All right. I don't know. At some point,
I saw it 5'3" ago, Mike. You know this.
Oh, I know. Well, I was talking about like weight or something. So, which I've done through COVID. But all right. So, anyways, let us talk, friends, here about Star Trek Season 3. We're plowing through this. In general, I've enjoyed this season. Tony, what's your opinion of the first two episodes? Just a brief overview.
Oh, I mean, there are moments that are a little eye-rolly once in a while, but that's. To be honest, that's all of Star Trek, right? I think that in Season 3, they have finally started to figure out this show and these characters. I'm really, I was just talking about this with my friend Gary about how Seasons 1 and like a lot of 2 were not must-see TV. But then as we neared the end of 2, I started really getting invested in what was going to happen. And then now that we're in 3, like I can't wait for what is going to happen next every week so far.
I tend to agree. I think that they have simplified and streamlined and got back to telling simple stories without giant narratives. And this is my big, I could probably say this at the end, but I'll say it in the beginning. I really think that you could drop the first two seasons and just start from here. If the show started at Season 3 and they jumped into the 31st century, I don't know how much you'd miss.
Yeah, no, I don't. I don't know that you're very wrong. I mean, just a little bit, you could get a little bit of explanation that we've gotten, and say, hey, we're from the past. What's going on? We had to save the world. We've all seen enough Star Trek to go, oh, sure, you save the universe by having to come to the future. I get it. Like you would just go, yeah, sure. That sounds like Star Trek to me.
Yeah.
And This season, especially, we're starting to get to know the characters. Like, I've loved, I can't remember which episode it was, but in 3 or 4. But, starting to really get to see, like, Detmer and some of these supporting characters who now I'm starting to care about. They've become like Sulu and Chekhov and Data to me, as opposed to, everything being burn them. Which she's great, but it's getting spread out and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I agree. They are definitely taking their time to really circle around. As I talked in the last podcast, the first episode of the second season when Pike showed up, he says, I know this is going to seem like a strange left turn, but I'm here. Everything's going to be normal now. You can trust me. And in the third season, second episode, Saru says, I know you want to go out and explore and I want to go out and run around, but we're going to work on the integrity of the ship and its crew. which is the mandate of this season, seems like.
Fold
inward. Let's clean house and take care of stuff here before we move outward.
Yep.
And I think they've done that. So,
and speaking of Saru, I mean, I love what this character has become.
So good.
It might be too early to talk about him, but
no, not at all. Well, let's jump into these. Let's jump into these episodes here, because we're gonna blast through three of them. But episode three here, they arrive at, I don't remember the name of the episode. I'm not even gonna put it in there, but because we're just
going to Earth.
They go to Earth. They go to Earth.
Isn't it People of Earth? Isn't that episode three?
I think it is People of Earth. Maybe I could add that in. I can't add it.
I haven't watched three or four in a while. I watched them, when they came out, and I haven't rewatched them. And I just watched five like yesterday. I'm glad you have notes on what happened in the first ones.
Well, I vaguely remember them. My feeling is I will go back and recap these, almost like you could start up season three from nothing and then recap some of the stuff from seasons one and two.
Yeah.
But in this one, basically, they go to Earth and they find out Earth has sort of been secluded since the burn. They've kind of become, in some ways, they kind of closed the borders. I don't know what they're referencing there, but
yeah,
they
right.
closed the borders. And the Federation is sort of not wanted or appreciated there. And the big takeaway from this one is they pick up, they find out that this admiral left a message of how to find the Federation, and it's with this girl. I think her name is Adriana?
Adira.
And I say girl because they call her a she in this, but I think she presents as non-binary. I don't know if in the real world or not.
Right, I think her identifiers are they.
Yeah, but in the show, they identify her as a she.
Mm-hmm.
And she is part Trill, but she's also human. But she can't remember anything about, because she has all these other Trill memories in her. And so it's a nice kind of callback.
Yep.
Do you have any other thoughts about this episode, Tony?
I liked it right off the bat. They kind of throw everybody for a loop. By having you go to Earth, everybody's excited. I sort of like that we pull the rug out and go, yeah, no, because it could have felt like, okay, we're just going back to Next Generation era or whatever. We go to Earth, we get our orders, what's next? And
yeah.
I like that they had, it wasn't that easy.
Right. It wasn't that easy, but it also isn't a season-long arc of, Earth's a shambles, we've got to save it, you've got to find these five keys.
Right.
It's just...
exactly.
Yeah, it's just kind of self-contained. We've got this, I can't even remember what the conflict was of this episode, to be honest. All I know is they picked up Adira and they have to go someplace else.
It was that the Earth, now I'm forgetting the name of it, but like the Earth Protection Defense Fund, whatever it was, they showed up on the ship and were like, who are you? Why are you here? We're taking your ship, And Saru and Burnham had to have that moment with the captain of the planetary defense group. And I really liked those scenes, though, with that woman in charge of the defense of the planet going, why do we need the Federation?
Right. And then to push it on, then the Raiders show up, the bad guys show up.
Yes.
Who are from Titan. And it turns out, even though they're wearing a goofball helmet, they're actually all humans.
Right.
And it's one of those, can't we all just kind of get along kind of things, which is brokered by Michael Burnham. Although I think Saru actually kind of steps in a little bit. Saru's finally captain, which we're thrilled about.
Right.
Thrilled. He's sort of captain. He's half captain. He's like three quarters captain, I'll say. Because Burnham really interjects herself a lot in this show still.
She does. But she's also, as these episodes, the next two that we're talking about go on, she defers to him. I like that even she is going, okay, he's the captain. And I like that he made her first officer. I think it's a good relationship.
I had told Tony when we were having conversations after episode two, when Burnham shows up after a year, my fear was that here's Saru finally going to sit in the captain's chair again, and then they're going to take it away from him because Michael Burnham knows more about the 34th century than he does, and so she's more equipped to it. But in fact, she says, I actually don't want to hang around here. I want to stay with Booker, but then they kind of convince her to stick around as first officer. There's a lot of like, you know, musical chairs on this episode, but it does come down to Saru's the captain. She yields to that. Finally, we finally get Saru being the outright captain after four or five different false starts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, season two, he was the captain until Pike shows up. Like, I'm captain now. Like, oh. And then he's going to be captain again. Then Giorgio takes over as captain. It's like, what is it? He's a great captain. Make him captain.
Yeah, and I really like what Doug Jones does with Saru. It's he is just becoming one of my favorite Trek guys now, you know. And it's such a different style of leadership than we've seen in any of the shows. And it's fun that he's an alien instead of a human being the captain. And so I really dig it. I like what they're doing.
It's unintentional. Like, I mean, I know they wanted to make Michael Burnham captain at some point in time, but, you know, and have the first, you know, African-American female, you know, person be captain, which is fine, you know, but Saru in some ways is such an interesting, unique choice and such an even stronger choice in some ways, because we've never seen that. We've never seen an alien be the lead of a Star Trek show. Amazing. And it gives Michael Burnham's character more liberty to be that loose cannon, just doing her stuff.
Yeah, very much.
You know, she's the Riker now, which is great. You know, she's even more Riker than Riker.
That's true.
Because Riker towed the line pretty quickly after the first couple of seasons. He's like, you know, Picard would go down, he was like, I'm going to go down the Riker. And he's like, I guess I can't talk any sense to you. He's like, yep. And then Picard would just go. So.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we haven't seen where the first officer is much more of a wild card than the captain, you know?
Yeah. So we have this interesting dynamic between the two of them, but Saru is fabulous. I find myself now walking with his little back arm sachet at times, like not ironically, like I'll just kind of do that kind of drip, 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 drip. And I'm like, yeah, that's what Saru does. I'm kind of digging it. So, all right. So that's that episode. Episode four, we go to the Trill planet. Where they try to figure out,
I like this picture, to be or not to be.
it's yeah. If you're listening on the podcast, we're not showing a lot of slides here, but I'm showing a shot of Michael Burnham. I don't know if she's holding something there. Maybe they CGI'd it out. It looks maybe she's grabbing some. I don't know what she's grabbing. And Adira is watching, like smart alecky Adira. There's a lot of smart asses on this ship now.
Yeah,
we have Adira. We have Jet Reno now,
yep.
Stamets and Tilly.
Yep.
They're just being like smart asses all over the place.
Yeah, and it even gets commented on in episode five.
Yes.
Which is fun. Worf says, your working relationship is kind of chaotic and unprofessional. And they're like, yeah, but it works.
Well, it suddenly works. I mean, because all these characters have been slammed together. Right. We'll get to that in a minute. So this one is sort of a little bit of a bodily episode. Nice locations. We get to meet some Trill. One of the slides here. And then we get to have this kind of weird spaghetti world here where she goes into the water, gets sucked in the water, Adira. And then Michael Burnham goes in after her. Now, here's one of the things we're going to see in a few of these episodes, which is only Michael Burnham can do these things.
Yes.
In this episode, in episode five, Culbert, who is the medical officer, says, no, I think you're more suited for this, and then provides a bad explanation for why.
It's a little mumbo-y-jumbo-y. You've had the same kind of loss that she's had and the experience. In the meantime, the rest of us are like, but dude, you died.
You died, went through a different dimension and lived with mushroom people for years. You're just on the same part, but I get it. Let's have her, you know.
Right. And to just totally honestly, this episode, episode four with the Trill, I loved. Mm-hmm. It felt to me like old school Trek for a minute, you know? This one and the next one just felt like I could have seen this being an adventure that Kirk and McCoy or Picard and Riker were going on with their team, you know?
What they're doing now in this whole season are they're isolating these and turning these more into episodes, episodic as opposed to serialized. You can go back to any episode of season two and one and two, and none of them have any import on a singular level. You know, episode six is just a part of episode 7, 8, 9, 10. I mean, it doesn't matter. This episode stands alone as much as it has a little bit of stuff like, oh, we have to do this and this and this, but it really is Adira's kind of story.
Yeah.
With our main character helping a guest star, which as you say, is Next Generation, is TOS, you know, it's, you know, story of the week kind of thing.
Yep.
So.
And at the same time, they do enough dropping in where from this sort of singular episode, things that can happen next are going to change a lot. You know what I mean? Like this whole story with Adira and how we find out her backstory, which I loved all of that stuff, but it propels what happens next. Like the next thing is, it couldn't happen without this episode, but you know what I mean? Which I love.
Yes. So you can watch this episode standalone if you want. Mm-hmm. But it's going to give you enough breadcrumbs to lead you further on, which is great. I think that's the sweet spot. You know, it's like lightly serialized. That's, you know, it's sometimes right. When I go out and pitch shows, we say they're lightly serialized because, and I fully agree because serialization is just this Ouroboros, this snake eating itself. And eventually you turn into shows like The Flash or Lost or these things where you can't keep up. You know, and you can't just drop in and say, oh, that was a really interesting story. I wonder what the other stories are like.
Right.
You know,
and it becomes overwhelming for people to go, oh, I'm going to have to go back and watch six seasons to figure out what's happening. You know? Yeah, I agree. It's a nice blend of those two things. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was good. I mean, it's, you know, interesting to see the Trill backstory. I mean, we could probably get more Trill backstory on this stuff. Again, they're serving two masters here a little bit. You know, you're trying to, again, it's through the lens of Michael Burnham, through the lens of the serialization. It would have been nice to just have like two episodes on the Trill planet and really learn who they are, but we got some of the stuff. So that was okay. I enjoyed it enough.
It did start off an interesting thing that I hope, and this is one of my few, not quibbles, but I hope that everywhere we go, that we knew that was nice in our Trek gen era. Mm-hmm. I hope we don't continue this trend of every place has turned awful. You know what I mean? Like we go to Earth, oh, we can't be here. We go to Trill, no, you're not welcome here. We find the Federation, you know, finally, and the whole beginning to that is, no, we don't want you here. I'm hoping that that's not gonna be like a series, season-long event, because that will get tiresome.
Yeah, I mean this was their kind of you know cold restart of the engines of the warp engines to do Naked Time analogy there. Like they were jumping so far ahead. It's 930 years, fresh slate. You know, I mean you could do whatever you want, but you're right. It is a little bit of the greatest hits of old Star Trek. You didn't. Someone pointed out in another review that you didn't have to make this a Trill. You know, you could make this any other creature that's symbiotic with this person. You know, I mean, you could create a whole different species. The Trill is, and it does, this Trill doesn't link up to anything from Deep Space Nine in any way. It's just like a name drop. And so it's interesting, but you're right. We are still stuck in the other 800 episodes of Star Trek in some way.
Well, not to belabor it, didn't even mind that part at all. The thing I wasn't a huge fan of was places that we loved are bad now. You know
right.
what I mean? We went to Earth, they're bad, you can't go there. We went to Trill, it's negative. You know, every place, all these places that we loved, I don't want them to turn, you know, if we go to Ryza, is it now a murder planet? You know, I don't want that to happen.
I'd be okay with that, actually. That would be like, we flipped hard. We flipped hard on this, you know?
Exactly. It's like, planet, murder where? Planet. No, God, no.
Big Wrigley's murder planet.
That's I really did love this episode on Trill. I just thought that moment when they get to meet all of the past Trill hosts and Adira was accepted was really well done. I mean, it's been a while since a Trek episode hit me emotionally. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And that one did. I loved it.
We have not seen, first of all, like I don't recall seeing anything in the Trill episodes in Deep Space Nine which came close to this level of backstory. It was always just like, oh, you know, Curzon Dax said this and that. You know, it was always sort of front-facing, you know, it's like, this is what Jadzia or Ezra Dax did. And then like, we kind of go in these backstories of this. This was a very nice kind of look at it. But to your point, the supposition that a planet, a whole planet, when they don't have access to other things from other planets, is just going to fall into chaos. Is
or instantly become xenophobic.
Yeah. I mean, the analogy holds here that, you know, I guess America's kind of fallen apart with COVID in some ways, but we've run out of toilet paper. That's our biggest thing. You know, you and I are still having podcasts here. Australia's doing pretty good. I mean, I know that for sure. Other places are doing pretty well and life goes on, with this burn. I wonder now if they planned this. When did they plan this season? Because it is an interesting analogy, right? The burn is sort of like we're all kind of quarantined in some ways. You know, we can't.
Right, very much so. And the whole, yeah, I do like a lot the connection to current times when it comes to the amount of xenophobia we're seeing happen. You know, the shrinking of the Federation, that stuff.
Yeah.
My only thing was I don't want every place we go to be the same storyline of this is bad, now we have to treat her good. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, it's been concerning the burn only happened 120 years ago.
Yeah.
The way that things have fallen backwards, like I would think, wait, but you also had another like 700 years to move forward. So, or 800 years basically. So like very little has progressed in 800 years. Maybe that's the Dark Ages we're talking about.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, like 900 years is a long period of time. And either, I was hoping the burn was going to be like, oh, 200 years after you guys left, the burn hit and hit hard. And then, you know, we were all screwed. So,
right.
And then it's been to this point in time to catch up to basically being like 100 years past you.
Yeah.
So let's move on to this next episode, because here we are. This is the Federation. We're looking at... Looking at this weird picture here of Admiral Charles Vance, not Charles Dance from Game of Thrones, but Oded Fehr from The Mummy, I believe, right? Isn't he from The Mummy?
Oh, I don't remember.
I think he is, yeah. Great. And then this
is... I like his admiral.
What's that?
I like his admiral.
Well, and we're on Admiral Watch right now. All admirals are evil. So we'll keep an eye on him. Hopefully he'll plan on being good, but we're looking at a picture of him and then this cool kind of Starfleet command kind of place in this, I don't, what is this bubble here, a bubble of seclusion, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell they're
hiding. It's this nice little like distortion field, whatever, that they all live in, which was again, one of those really cool moments for me when they broke through there.
The moment when they go through, and actually the music cue is really beautiful when they go through the bubble and they all get a chance to see Starfleet again and what it's like. And we're looking at a picture of Jet Reno and Stamets and a couple of like weirdos in the background, all staring through the window at just what the future finally looks like. This is what Starfleet looks like. And there's that sense of wonder and awe, which we have not had in this show or in Picard, to be honest. There's nothing wonderful or awe-inspiring about Star Trek in either of those two shows. So we finally get it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really a beautiful moment when, and there were some really great callbacks too for the fans. You know, some great Easter eggs in this chunk.
Well, and I'm sure you're alluding to the fact that we see the Voyager J.
The Voyager J.
Yeah, and it sort of looks like the Voyager. I have my Voyager ship right here. It sort of looks like. The Voyager, no letter, Voyager, right? I mean, very similar design.
And I love that it was fun. I actually got to explain it to my daughter over the phone, because during quarantine, my daughter, who's 22, and I, while we were quarantined together, did a rewatch of Voyager. And which she had never watched anything. She was not a Trek person. And so the first one series that she ever watched was Voyager with me a few months ago, while we were all COVIDed down in our homes. And so I watched this episode of Discovery, and I called her and was like, Maggie, you know what just showed up in the 31st century or whatever we were, you know? And she was very excited because after she just, I mean, Janeway's her captain, like she fell in love. That was her first, you know, her first trek. And so now she's halfway through her first experience of Next Generation because we watched Voyager and then she was like, how, what order should I watch the rest of them in? So I've got her doing Next Generation, then we're going to do Deep Space Nine, you know, just so she can catch up. But seeing that Voyager and hearing even Tilly go, Jay, what is that? Like 11 iterations of a ship? You know, that was fun. The fan in me nerded out.
That was very cool. And of course, the other Easter egg is the Nog.
Yep, the USS Nog.
Yeah, which I think fans were asking for, and you know, that's a nice little fan service-y thing. That is a nice nod to Nog and to Aaron Eisenberg.
And in fact, one of the things I was going to bring up to you, because I know you know had met him, was I read a little article with the producers, an interview with the producers, and the class of ship is an Eisenberg. So they officially created a class of ship called the Eisenberg in his honor, and they named the first one the USS Nog.
Oh, that's so great. That's so great.
Pretty sweet thing.
Have you watched What We Left Behind, the documentary?
Yes.
Yeah. It's the bummer thing about it is when they traded the little writer's room for the eighth season, the first thing they do is kill off Nog. You know, like, he lived for this stuff, you know? But now he lives on forever, so that's great. It's a wonderful gesture.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they get on board Starfleet. Let's see, I'll go back and forward. I got a couple of slides on that. So they get on board Starfleet, and Starfleet's a little reticent because obviously, as we recall in season two, the Discovery was completely disavowed. With all traces of it scrubbed so that we would never have to answer any of these questions for the next 700 episodes about spore drives or about Spock's adoptive sister or any of that kind of nonsense.
Retcon.
and Charles Dance and his pissy lieutenant don't trust them. Actually, we'll go through, but they do see these weirdos, the Killy, thrashing around violently, these weird monsters in sick bay, which is in some sort of weird pit where everyone can just kind of observe people like dying.
I know.
It's like, what the hell is this place, you know?
No, they said something, they referenced something about he's got to treat them in the halls because the surgery's overflowing or something.
Oh.
There was a reference to it.
These ships have, like, first of all, like, they have like floating chairs,
yeah,
and then they have like floors which like keep on going as you walk, which is terrifying. I don't know if you noticed that in the last scene, as you know, Charles Dance is walking on the floor, it forms as he's walking.
Oh my god, that is
watch that last scene. They're literally walking like his like he's got this weird. You can see the floor, and then as he walks, like the floor fills in, like under his feet. Like, yeah, that's so impractical. Why? Like, what if that doesn't work? You know,
right? Just one little computer glitch, and down he goes.
That, like, and they had the holographic walls ship. I'm like, you guys, man, you're putting a lot of trust into the, you know.
Yeah.
They're saying, oh, there's one that's organic and one that's holographic. I'd stay in the organic one because, you know, if you lose power, you're just in a big belly of a ship, but if you lose power in the, you know, holographic, like,
right, goodbye everybody.
Yeah, but these weirdo creatures are dying, and I like the fact that the Mandalorian is still completely in sync with Star Trek Discovery, because they have the frog lady and they have these frog people. I don't know what's going on, but these shows, they're in the same universe. I'm convinced of it now.
Because that's weird. That one, the other ones you were talking about.
Like Frog Lady goes into the pond, remember? Yep. And then Adira goes in the pond. They're on ice planets. Both shows display shovels, which is the first time I'd seen it in either franchises. Like on Tatooine, a dude has a shovel, just like a regular like Ace Hardware shovel. And then like in the Spore Drive, a dude's cleaning up like Leland's guts with a shovel. And I'm like, what are we doing here? This, it's just, anyway, so.
They're just calling each other. What are you guys going to do in episode 6?
It's got to be like the writer was right next to each other. I was like, what are you guys doing? I'm like, oh, hey, you know what I saw? They're doing Ice Planet this time. Let's do Ice Planet. You know, and they're doing big worm creatures. Let's do big worm creatures. Let's do a Western. Anyway, so they have these things, but then they have to get debriefed, and we have a really funny sequence.
I really liked that sequence. It was fun.
This is a shot of Tig Notaro, who I've met a couple of times, very nice, but also very acerbic, eating black tortilla chips with salsa as she's being grilled by an AI robot thing. And the funny thing is, as I said to you earlier, Tony, you could make the first and second seasons just like a prologue-y kind of thing, and it would be fine, because the way they describe it is absolutely bananas, batshit insane, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, everybody gets their own hilarious, you know, well, yeah, I had to wear like a dominatrix thing, and then it all turned out fine. You know, everybody's got their own ridiculous version of the ridiculous shit that's happened to them.
It's so refreshing that they're owning it, that like, you know, because Jet Reno's talking about, yeah, like, you know, just like captains and admirals are falling from the sky, and right. And Culbert was like, yeah, I died, and then I came back to life, and I lived in the Spore universe, and...
My Culbert favorite version with him was, I died, well, I was murdered, but my murderer and I are fine now, you know, we're okay now, and like, all this crazy, but then the thing that happens that's really important during all this crazy debriefing is that Giorgio gets debriefed by David Cronenberg.
Like David Cronenberg, ladies and gentlemen.
Shows up. I loved this so much.
That was a really good scene. So Giorgio, who should be the most unusual character in the ship, right? I mean, not even close, 0% close, because there are people from Spore Drives and Red Angels. Right. But she's from a different universe, and David Cronenberg, as they call him Kovac or something like that, Kovic, but they don't name him in the episode. He's this like goofball guy who's just like asking her questions, but it's a really good scene. It's a really well-written scene.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love that he's there watching the two AIs,
yeah,
right, ask her questions. And she, through, you know, techno-babble, mumbo-jumbo, blinking her eyes too fast so the AIs can't keep up, she fritzes out the AIs. And forces him to actually deal with her. And he's just so delightful in this. I was like, how do we get more of him throughout the rest of the series? I just want more of him.
Yeah, he was so good. And for those of you who are listening to the podcast, I did blink several times at Zoom, seeing if I could destroy its algorithm. It didn't work, so.
Oh, I'm still here.
Yeah, we're still all here. No, it was nice to have someone dress down Giorgio, because Giorgio's a problem. Giorgio is very much in the Dr. Smith, Loki, Gaius Baltar phase, where it's like, why do we need her on this ship?
She's
at every junction, she's like, oh, I would just take over the ship and kill all of you. It's like, wait, do we need her anymore? What is her rank here? And
you know, the challenge for us, if you're a casual viewer of the show, you're probably not hating it, right?
Yeah.
And not that I hate it, but if you pay attention and follow the Trek news and are a nerd who listens to podcasts, and I mean that with love, then you know that there's a Section 31 show with Giorgio that's been greenlit. That's supposed to be being made, right? So at this point, we're all just watching the wheels spin, going, when does she leave for her new show? How's that happen? Where's she going to go? No.
And the sooner the better, because I just don't know what she's doing there. And she is from two seasons ago.
Right.
And has so little value now that she's... And
the problem is Michelle Yeoh is so great, but they have too many great people and things.
Yeah. I mean, she's very good at what she's doing. And I mean, this scene really accentuated what she did. But when she's alone, like talking to these people, like smart-assing Tilly or Saru.
Yeah.
Like, why do we need you? Like, Starfleet doesn't exist. You were like commissioned by people who are dead.
Right.
Let's just like space you, you know? I mean,
the thing that was interesting through this episode that might lead us there was the little tag at the very end of the episode with her.
Yeah.
Where she's standing, not to get ahead of your you know, time frame, Mike, on your charts. But I liked that little, you know, what's the Giorgio mystery? Because after her David Cronenberg interview, Burnham finds her standing in a hallway, like in a daze.
Yeah.
Staring off into nothingness for a while. Like Burnham tries to talk to her a couple of times. And so that just leads me to go, okay, what's next there? What's that going to be about? What's happening? You
know, yeah.
Is that the beginning of her winding up going away?
Well, and that's my supposition as well. I feel that kind of happening because we're starting to close ranks here a little bit in the show. And the next slide we're looking at here is all the Discovery people or all the extras they could hire in the shuttle bay where they showed that Buster Keaton movie last episode, where people laughed uproariously.
Yes.
Which is always a pet peeve of mine when they show like something which is not that funny and people are laughing. Like, let me show you something which is 1,100 years old and we're all going to laugh really hard at it. Like, no, you're not. But I got the intent, but people never laugh that hard at stuff. But they're assembled here again to be told that they're all going to be separated for some weird reason, to be reassigned to different ships. And everyone's pissy about that, even though the whole reason they came back to Starfleet is to help. And now they're like, we don't want to help. We want to be on this ship. Just a little thing there. We see Tilly and we see the girl who was Arium in the first season. Her name is now Nielsen, I think. Nielsen,
yep.
Nielsen. And now she's just kind of back and always standing in the background. But we're getting some cohesion because these people and God, what is her name? Detmer is now front and center.
Yep.
These characters are now front. We're starting to push them a little closer. We're starting to get a crew, not just a Burnham show. It's not just the Michael Burnham show every week. So.
Right, absolutely. Well, and there was some nice stuff. I mean, we skipped over it in episode 4, but you know, that whole episode was embraced and enfolded with Dr. Kober's doctor's log. I liked that device where we got more of him because he was sort of our, you know, captain's log narrator the whole episode. And I really liked the way that worked. I hope there's more of those kind of things because now that we're starting to get into more of him and Detmer and some of the others, you know, I want to learn more about Uwosakun and Bryce and Reese and the bridge crew.
Yeah, we did skip over episode 4's Worst Thanksgiving Ever, which I totally read into that. Yeah, it's I half expected a food fight. The old Cheers episode where they get in a big food fight. I would have been fine with that, but
right. And there was a thing in episode 4 I want to come back and touch on later too. But
okay, well let's press on here. So they're reassigned, but Burnham of course decides we've got to save these Killy creatures, these Tilly-Killy creatures, and so they make an impassioned plea to Spore Drive over to this. Spore ship, the seed ship,
yeah,
which coincidentally has Nahan's people on it, which gives her a reason to be in the episode, fine, because she's another tag along, isn't she?
Yeah,
she just kind of like, oh, I'm gonna go on this ship too. Wait, with you were on the Enterprise, we didn't really need you, and now you're on the Discovery, don't really need you, and we are fixing that problem in this episode, aren't we?
They are. And I like her. I like the character. I like the actor. But yeah. It's one of those, how many people do we have, you know, questions.
Yeah, it's I mean, we're gonna replace Lieutenant Hardass with Lieutenant Hardass, just a different century in a few minutes here, because she's, you know, it's a one for one transfer. But at least we get some stuff here. They land on this seed pod ship. And she gets to kind of shine here a little bit, and it's not a bad little story. It's kind of told through flashbacks or of you know, video logs.
Yep.
Of we're looking at the picture of this guy's Dr. Addis, I think, and his family died through a coronal mass ejection, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But he got trapped. You want to pick that up, Tony? He got trapped in a
Yeah, he was beaming, you know, this family maintains the Federation's seed vault, which I think is a really cool idea. Just the concept of that is really cool. You know, we have one of those here on Earth. There's a big seed vault. And I love that the Federation has one, and it's a big ship. And it's currently, there's a whole family that lives on it right now. And to get into the vault itself, you have to beam in for safety's sake. There's not even a door to get into it, right?
Right.
So he was beaming into the vault when this CME thing happened, and his family was killed, and he was altered. So he's not quite dead, he's not quite alive. And this was one of those things when I talked about this episode feeling a lot like you know, the original series or Next Generation, it felt very much like a, hey, we've arrived here at this planet because we heard there's a problem. Oh, let's go down and solve this problem. And they get that adventure and they solve it and everybody's good. They're, you know, it had that kind of feel that was almost like you were talking about, a little bottle show of this adventure. And I really enjoyed it because the adventure was good. You know, you were pretty sure everybody was going to be fine at the end. But they also used it as a nice way for Nan to say, this is my place. Like, this, they were my people, and I don't have a place on your ship. I'm out of time, I'm out of my world, and this is how I can, you know, honor Arium, and I had to kill this woman, and we come all the way back to that, and she's got, gets to fulfill her duty, you know. And so I thought it was a nice moment.
She is definitely honoring Arium in a couple ways. One is that they both get one episode and then they are ejected into a different space, right? You know, it's like, here's your backstory. Bye-bye.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, it's, but yeah, I agree. This
you have to be one of those actors who, as soon as you open the script, they go, oh no, they're talking about my backstory. Oh shit, am I getting killed? Oh God, you know.
I, you know, like when I was doing The Invisible Man 20 years ago, and I would open up a script and it would be like, oh, I've got a lot to do here. Oh no. Oh dear God, please skip to the end. Okay. I'm still there. You know, like, you know, woo, made it. There is value to being not that important. You know, there is value to being useful, but not super important. And not being, if you're not a series regular, just so you guys know, if you're not a series regular, you're not guaranteed to be in the show. You can be written out at any moment. And one of the funny things is moving, like, especially from, I would say from 2000 with like Lost and moving on, recurring characters, which are not series regulars, which are not contractually paid to be in a certain amount of episodes, they are the currency of plot in TV shows. You spend those and kill them off in order to make things happen. That's how you get like shocking moments, by killing people off who are sort of kind of in the background, but you know, not your most important people. Yeah. Important people die at the end of the season. But
it'll be interesting to see if Nam comes back ever, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, cause she's a good actress. She did a good job, but she was definitely out of time and just such a legacy character. And, it was fine that she stayed. It reminded me, this episode reminded me of Next Generation with all the technobabble as they figured it out.
Yep.
We have not had that in this series or in Picard, basically, where like, oh, it's this and this and this. We figured it out. We've solved the mystery.
Yeah.
And it also reminded me of the original series, the Corbinite Maneuver, where that, you know, that guy who was on the Enterprise went on Baylock's ship and, you know, he just like travels the universe with Baylock now.
Right. Yeah.
Cause he just couldn't, you know, he just like, you know, hey, I'll, you know, I'm not paying attention to my job. I'm going to sit on this ship. So I thought it was good. I thought that was kind of a nice little exchange. And so here she, but here's the thing that I didn't like about this whole exchange, Tony. And it does follow from the previous episode, which is Nan is sitting there with her people and this guy's having a tough time dealing with death. And so Culbert's like, Burnham, you have to go talk to this dude because Nan, she's too deep into it. She can't talk to him.
Right. Yeah, it was a little, why does Michael have to solve it? Nan is, she's his people. Let her talk to him, you know.
With the similar reason of, well, you know what? I'm going to keep your captain here who is the head of your ship, just to make sure you guys don't run off and do anything. Sorry you're staying here. I'm like, what? it's all convenient reasons to get Michael still front and center.
Yeah.
When I think this is more of an ensemble show now, I think we need to make that switch.
I agree with you. I love Senua Martin-Green, but it feels like it clicks better when it works as an ensemble show.
Yeah.
So if she's playing her part in the machine instead of pushing everybody else out of the way, not that she's doing it, but the writers, you know what I mean? I feel like it works better.
Had Nan been there and gone in and done this, and Burnham just stood in the background and watched, and we see how this plays on her as a lesson to her, as opposed to her having to again save the situation, it would have been so much more powerful. You know, that's how the old show went sometimes, where it's like, oh, I'm going to watch this play out.
Yep.
And it's going to affect me.
And I think we could have gotten a very, a more powerful moment if Nan, in her discussions with this guy who's not quite alive or dead and isn't going to make it, right? And has lost his family.
Yeah.
If in those discussions, she comes to terms with what she needs to do. But instead, she gets sort of pushed out. Burnham has the discussion and Nan just watches and comes to this realization.
Yeah, it's a halfway solution because, again, we are starting to shunt off characters you don't quite need. So, but this was a bad middle ground solution. It should have been Nan's episode. She should have like forwarded on through this, and Michael Burnham should have learned something, or Culbert should have been in some ways a part of this. But it's a quibble, or maybe we can call it a Quibi now. I think maybe we call it a Quibi because, you know, Quibi is no longer a network, but it's supposed to be quick bites. It's a quick,
yeah.
It's a Quibi.
Yeah. It's a quick bite of consternation.
Yes. So we bid a fond farewell to this character and this actress, and then instantly probably going to hot swap her with this woman.
Right.
Lieutenant Hardass.
Yeah, I hope she doesn't wind up serving on Discovery.
She might. I mean, Discovery does attract a lot of characters, and I didn't need the one-to-one swap. I think we have plenty of other bridge crew we could really dig into.
Yeah.
Like Detmer is just kind of like hanging there. It's like, what is your deal? Is it PTSD? Is she control? Is she, I don't know what her deal is, you know?
Right. Yeah. I feel like it's a little PTSD. I mean, they started to get into it where she went and said, yes, I want to talk to Culber, you know.
Yeah.
But I really loved that stuff with Detmer. It was this episode or the previous episode where she talked about, you know, I'm the flashy pilot. I'm the one who's not supposed to be scared of anything, you know. That worst Thanksgiving ever that you talked about was really telling for a few characters.
Yes. I mean, it's a little late in the party, in the Thanksgiving dinner, for like after seeing her for 24 episodes, for her suddenly to pop off and be like, I'm an ace pilot. It's like, I didn't even know your name until like three episodes ago. You know, I mean,
right.
It's fine. I mean, I don't mind, you know, reverse engineering this, but it makes me think like, is there something other? I hope it's PTSD because I don't need any more control or Leland or Section 31 stuff.
Right. Absolutely. I think it is. And I'm with you. I hope it is. And because like I said earlier, I'm hoping for more of that, you know, to happen throughout the rest of the season. I want to learn more about Owosakun and Bryce and Reese and all these other guys that we haven't had the chance to learn about yet. And I feel like that's part of the thing that this team, you know, as they like you said, soft rebooted for season three, they're figuring out. They're like, okay, what do we have that we need to focus on?
I can tell you the excitement of, you know, having played a small character where you're just kind of in the background and just always kind of hanging on and being like, how's this all going to play out? And then like, they start naming you and then you start, I mean, these bridge crew who are just like, all right, get us like five extras. Okay. You and you, you know, and then suddenly it's like, I got a name and this is looking really good, you know? And you know, all these Canadian actors are just, you know, just, I am cheering for them at every step of the way, you know?
And I don't know if you watched Will Wheaton's The Ready Room after these. I've seen a few of them, and I watched the one after this episode. And the woman who plays Nan was delightful.
Oh,
and,
good.
And they had a very, she and Will Wheaton had a very fun interview. So if anybody hasn't watched that, it's worth watching because it's very fun. And they're both nerds, and they nerd out about being on Star Trek together, and it's just fun. But I hope we get to dig into more of the secondary characters.
I always cringe a little bit, and maybe I shouldn't, but I think the Adira person, she said, I've never watched Star Trek before. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's like, it's fine because you bring it a fresh perspective. But when there's people who really love Star Trek get on Star Trek, that's right. Always like, or who really nerd out on stuff, that's yeah. Such a double bonus.
It is. I totally agree. Yeah.
It's like,
but on the flip side, I mean, she's like six, I don't know how old she is. She looks like she's like 16, 18. No, I'm like, she hasn't been around for Next Generation, Mike. You're 100 years old. Leave her alone.
I know. Yeah, I'm the guardian forever here, you know, and I demand everyone watch the last 54 years of Star Trek. You know, is it so much? I mean, I guess not. So, all right. So this is my last here. So, I mean, as we leave this episode, we have to beware the burn, and not the burn, but the Burnham. Because Michael Burnham interjects her way. So Saru has a wonderful, he has this great speech. Whoever wrote this episode did a really good job. Just really very eloquent stuff. That whole, what is it, Giotto, the painter who came up with three-point perspective, and how discovery is providing that level of perspective. And it was like great. And you know, Admiral Charles Dance was all on board. And then Burnham comes in and she's like, you know, says some more stuff. You know, we really need to function as a team. And, you know, we're, I was like, we don't need that. We don't interject. The captain has just spoken. And Saru kind of like dresses her down a little bit towards the end and said, you know, maybe let me do the talking. And so I fear the burn. I fear Burnham, you know, creeping into, you know, I like this dynamic. I like her being a loose cannon. I like her going off on missions, but she's not the captain. And that's the thing I need to kind of see a little more of that. But it's an okay balance right now.
Well, and I think also, I mean, it looks like what they're doing is it's a nice character growth thing where she's figuring that out also, you know?
Yeah.
I think if they keep going that way, I mean, you know, one of the reasons I love Deep Space Nine so much, and I think it's my favorite Trek, is because from episode one, season one, to episode 26 of season seven, there's giant character growth, all of the characters, you know, whereas that doesn't happen on all the shows. A lot of them stay the same, like Ensign or Lieutenant, whatever is the same guy beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
And so if we can get that type of character growth where we see this young, hothead, impulsive person go and turn into somebody who can be a captain because she gets, you know, all views of things. She can see all aspects of things instead of the one impulsive reaction to everything. I think that's a really cool growth. And I'm hoping it goes that way.
I hope so too. And I mean, my only counter to that is that this lesson has been imparted on her for two seasons now.
That's very true.
There have been many times and it's like, Burnham, you're out of line. And then like, she's like, oh, lesson learned. And then she goes back out of line. It feels like, I will say that like, there's been a lot of meta commentary because we passed over the AI person looking at her and saying, oh, you have a lot of emotionality to you. You really live in like he said something about like how emotional she gets.
Yes. That's
such a meta comment of like, hey audience, we get it.
She cries
a lot, you know, she you know, pops off a lot. There were tears in this episode too. That was fine. But they were earned tears. I was fine with that. But
yeah.
I have high hopes for this. As they say in Star Trek IV, we have high hopes. It's a deep callback. The guy in the ship's like, our engineer has deployed a solar sail. We have high hopes to keep.
Nice.
But I have high hopes that whatever changes occurred in this season, they're taking it slow, and they're just working on character. And this will be a season of her growing. So,
yeah.
If that's all that happens, that she learns how to be a good first officer, 100% down. So.
Yeah, absolutely. The one of the things that we didn't talk about that I thought was interesting, it was just a little callback, was Admiral Vance says, you're time travelers, which automatically makes me suspicious because of the temporal Cold War rules or agreement or whatever it was he said. But it was so interesting because that was, I'm right now in the middle of an Enterprise rewatch because I never even finished Enterprise.
Oh yeah.
It's the only Trek show that I know, you know, somewhere partway through season one, life got busy and it just wasn't like must see TV. And I just fell away.
Same here. Yeah.
And so I'm in the middle of a rewatch, and the temporal Cold War is a thing that's happening in Enterprise. Mm-hmm. But it's never been mentioned in any other Trek show. And so I thought it was really cool that there was just that little callback to it of, you know, hey, we acknowledge this exists and this temporal stuff happens and time travel happens. We all agreed not to do it. So the fact that you did it makes me suspicious of you, you know? And then of course, Discovery can go, we don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like it was another one of those little callbacks to the Trek universe that I thought was cool.
Yeah. But didn't Enterprise happen before Discovery? It did. So was that not mentioned? I mean, I don't remember how that played out. So
I don't remember.
I mean, it is ahead of Enterprise is before Discovery chronologically. So maybe maybe they just didn't realize it. I mean, I like you, I didn't go through Enterprise. I just had a little bit of Star Trek fatigue, if you can believe that. But I always thought the temporal Cold War was a brilliant way of making a prequel relevant, because it's like the timeline is in flux.
Yeah.
If we don't fix now, then the future is ruined.
Yeah.
Great. We love it. Sure. So, I would wish, and I hope they stick with this, because time travel is so problematic and dimensional travel, that sort of like when the Arganians said, hey, there's going to be no fighting in 100 light year radius of our planet. That's it. You know, like this sort of like, we're capping it. You try and do that and everything's going to get hot to touch. So just cap time travel. It's done. You know, it's broken. So that maybe that'll be a thing, hopefully. Cause I mean,
yeah, maybe that's what they've done now, you know,
cause they could certainly go back. You know, I mean, they could get in another ship. They could be like, okay, Discovery, you're on your own. Hey, we're going to leave Discovery here in the 31st century. We're going to get one of your other ships, fly around the sun and go back.
Yeah. And go back to where we came from. Which brings me to the thing I wanted to talk about in episode 4, which really it's sort of an overarching series thing. You know, we know from the short Trek, Calypso, right, mm-hmm. that Enterprise is abandoned at some point for 1,000 years.
Discovery, right?
Discovery, thank you.
Right. Yeah.
And it ties in with the thing that happens with Saru and the computer in episode 4, where he's trying to get ideas he's asking the computer, how do I relax the crew? And all of a sudden, the computer and the mm-hmm. sphere data, whatever artificial intelligence that the computer is going to become, like asserts itself for a minute and a half.
Yes. Thank you for reminding me of that, because that was the most bananas moment there, where it's like, did he not notice the voice suddenly changed? And I mean, I get the screens behind him were all going goofy, but he couldn't see it. But what a huge, weird drop there that, like, oh, the computer's still the orb.
Yeah. Right? Oh, and I think he got it, because he immediately said, run a diagnostic.
Right, you know? Right.
But it is interesting that it's been an episode and a half and we haven't seen him go, hey, somebody check the computer. Because, you know, like, I'm waiting for that.
It's such a dangerous, weird thing. It's like, oh, we have the sphere computers in our ship. Like, I knew they knew that, but, like, he was just like, oh, yeah, run a diagnostic. Because that was a really good idea. But the voice was different and it was really weird.
Weird, yeah. But for us, you know, stepping back from him, it makes me want to go, okay, how does that tie into everything? Like, Georgia's being weird. We know she's going to leave at some point.
Yeah.
The computer is being weird. And we know that computer is going to wind up being the main computer at some point, right, whether it's in the season or not. You know, she's going to take over as the computer at some point, and the ship will be left alone for 1,000 years. When does that happen? Is that, you know what I mean? I want to see all of that happen. So I like that there's a little sort of ongoing mystery thing that's forming, along with the weirdness of, you know, in episode 5, Burnham's whole thing about how did people who have never grown up together know the same song if no one can get from one part of the galaxy to the other.
Right.
You know, there's something there that we haven't figured out yet. They're dropping in. And I just want to see all these pieces come together, you know?
That, to be honest, that worries me more than it makes me excited, because, I mean, we had the Red Angel, which led to madness. You know, I mean, like, it was a great premise of, like, hey, there's seven different locations you got to visit. And then they visited, like, three. And then, like, oh, but there's four more we've totally forgot about. You know, it's like, oh, I'll go do those. Oh, yeah, note to self. I'll do it. My mom did it.
Right.
It just went so off the rails. And so if they just kind of keep this in the background to like the last episode to be happy of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are some, I mean, and you know, with the short treks, I mean, I'm sure they could either just like take them and, you know, push them to the side or say, oh, we're going to do that some other time. But with Giorgio, just to go back for a little bit, I think that's probably the next purge they've got coming up, because she is definitely not super useful right now, and yeah, and just kind of an impediment to moving forward. You know, I mean, I'm trying to think if there's anyone else who we could probably lose. I mean, it feels like, I mean, like, you've got Adira, you've got Culbert, you've got Jet, you've got Tilly, you've got Stamets, you've got a lot of overlap there. So maybe there's all going to be a delightful foursome just running around in engineering, doing all sorts of stuff. Stamets feels like he could probably go. I'll be honest. It feels like Anthony Rapp could maybe go do another series somewhere else, because they're trying to make him relevant, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, Ting Notaro is the second to last person to show up, but I they'll probably keep them all, because they're all, you know, enjoyable, but it'll be interesting to see if other people, because it's a big cast. There's a lot of people still running around in that show.
Yeah. But, and you're right, the challenging one is Giorgio, because what is she doing?
She has no purpose right now. Everyone else has, they've found a place. Now the spore drive's kind of coming back. And so, because Stamets was kind of like, well, what am I doing? So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this, the rest of the season shakes out. Because the bridge crew's coming around. And you've got eight people in engineering, and, you know, a couple people in sick bay. Who's going where? But all right. So, I think we did it, Tony. I think we did three episodes in about an hour.
Okay.
Not bad. Not bad. So,
but it still makes me want to see what's happening next. You know, there's a lot of science fiction that doesn't do that.
Yes, and as they talk about, people are saying, oh, the third season is where we kind of grow the beard and it goes forward. I will cop to saying that this has been a very delightful season, because they've gone back to basics. They told stories about characters and stories that are self-contained. And my analogy of the Mandalorian, they've been doing that for the past two seasons. It's, you know, there's a little bit of breadcrumbs moving forward in each episode, but really it's just like, hey, Mandalorian's got to go fix his ship. Hey, Mandalorian's got to get across that ice, you know, barge or whatever. Like, whatever he's got to do one thing. And that's fine.
Give or take 40 minutes. I'm good to go.
It takes 40 minutes. There's cool special effects. You know, some weirdos show up and I'm happy, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I don't need to feel like the entire universe is in the balance. I just want to know what these characters are feeling and what they're going through. That's it.
And it's funny, because I'm not, you know, me, I'm not, like, I can't watch an episode of The Mandalorian and pick out every alien that was in the original trilogy or whatever. That's not my, I enjoy it. That's not my fandom, right? But it feels like that show is doing what I like about this season of Discovery, in the sense that they're moving forward, they're telling tight stories and focusing on action and what's happening, but they're also dropping in just enough stuff to make you go, oh, I remember that. Oh yeah, that ties me into the universe, you know, and you're not overwhelmed with it, but it's there.
You see a little new stuff, you see some old stuff. It's, I mean, and really Marvel, you know, which is also part of the whole Disney, you know, galactic Section 31 control empire, figured it out where you can drop in those Easter eggs as you move forward. You don't have to live in these moments.
Right.
But you honor the people who've watched for 54 years. But if you don't get it, someone will tell you. I'm going to have Chief Engineer Jason Mekaris is going to come on towards the end of Discovery season, and we're going to talk about The Mandalorian and Discovery in the shared universe theory, which I'm growing more and more confident of with every episode. That in fact, Discovery jumped into a different dimension, and they're now just in the same. They're gonna run into Boba Fett at some point.
Can't wait to see how much pushback you get on that theory. I feel like it would be a lot.
I think because Jason knows everything about Star Wars. He is our Star Wars aficionado. He's been watching Discovery, and so he's, I think it's two episodes behind. But he'll definitely not enjoy that conversation, but he has to go through it. We have to put him through it. So, all right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening and sticking around for this. Watch it on Facebook if you want. Listen to it on the podcast. We hope you guys enjoy it. We're having a good time here, and we've got a few more episodes, and then there's nothing else beyond that, right? There's no, like, after this, there's actually a break of Star Trek. So we can get back to old Star Trek if we want.
Yes.
Although I didn't do any Lower Decks, so we can talk about that maybe. We'll see.
Oh, worth talking about.
That's what I hear. So we'll go back to that. You know, I'll kind of parse it out. You know, I'll deal with my own grief, my own PTSD with it.
Yes.
As we move forward. But
I will be happy to jump on and hold your hand as we go through some of those episodes, because some of it is quite fun.
Yes. I trust that it is quite fun, but I'm the pilot of the ship. I've saved us so many times. No one gives me credit for this. No one. All right. So, guys, thanks a lot so much for watching this. I'm Mike McCafferty.
I'm Tony Gasselli.
And I just want to talk about
Star Trek.